The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
LinkedIn presents.
If I've learned anything in my three decades as a professional listener and teller of stories in the ER and on the page, it is the importance and the necessity of humility. It's not always easy to understand another human, but it's possible and it's necessary.
Hi, I'm Michael Kovnat. It's Tuesday, and this is the Next Big Idea Daily. I've got a question. What does it take to be a good doctor? Great training is essential, obviously, and a caring and diligent personality helps. But maybe one of the most important and underrated medical skills is the ability to listen. Specifically, to listen to the stories the patients tell, verbally or otherwise. Perhaps no specialty calls on this skill more than emergency medicine. ER physician Jay Baruch has written a new book sharing stories from his professional life and the remarkable patient encounters he has every day. It's called Tornado of Life, A Doctor's Journey Through Constraints and Creativity in the ER. Not only is Jay a practicing physician, he's also a professor of emergency medicine at Brown University and a published author of fiction. While the stories he shares are drawn from his own job, the insights he's about to share are universal. Here's Jay.
Early in my career, I was surprised to learn that the situations that I thought would scare me, where the line between life and death was thinnest, I had a handle on. For example, if there was a patient in cardiac arrest, I knew what to do. Someone gasping for air, I knew what to do. This is not to say I wasn't anxious or even terrified, but I was prepared. In these life-threatening moments, the problems were clear, if not recognizable, and the next steps laid out. I was also surprised by what I wasn't prepared for. Those distressing moments when I had to respond to and make meaning of ill-defined, unprecedented, or unusual problems, where patients shared messy stories riddled with uncertainty and ambiguity. In the narrative disaster zone of the ER, I was struggling to make sure that the story the patient is telling me is the one that I'm hearing. Medicine might pride itself on being an evidence-based practice, but the most rigorous research on large populations isn't much help when the biggest challenge was getting to the heart of a single person's distressing story and trying to ask the right questions. Driven by desperation and necessity, I had to think differently. To be a good doctor, I soon realized I had to think like a creative writer too, with curiosity, imagination, and vulnerability. In my new book of narrative essays, Tornado of Life, I bring the reader into these destabilizing moments as a physician and as a patient, when I felt lost or inadequate, confused or ashamed, unsettled, or just plain silly. People are their stories. They're not data with faces. Sick and frightened, tough, and maybe distrusting, patients are challenged with a daunting task that we take for granted. Construct and share deeply personal stories and confide in healthcare providers who, until that moment, were strangers to them. The narrative scholar, Catherine Montgomery, voiced this challenge beautifully. Clinicians work to perfect the maps of illness, she said, but each patient, each instance of illness is uncharted territory. In medicine, evidence from rigorous research studies informs clinical decisions. Who doesn't welcome well-paved roads built on a foundation of statistically valid data? But that comfort is fraught with risk if we steer patients onto these roads, even if that story is ill-fit for it. Creative writing skills came to the rescue in these moments for me because I was comfortable with the anatomy of stories, which centers on captivating characters with desires and needs, facing obstacles and trouble. Patients are the writers and characters in profound stories of living a life, where problems of the body are often complicated by a hornet's nest of other problems like relationships, money, mental health, substance use, even loneliness. The cognitive psychologist Jerome Bruner said, "Narrative is an invitation to problem finding, not a lesson in problem solving. It is deeply about plight, about the road rather than the inn to which it leads. The linguistic lineage of the word emergency dates back to the Latin word which means to bring to light. To get to the heart of a patient's problems or needs means I must be willing and able to venture into uncharted territory. Patients come to the ER for different reasons, but almost everyone has a story that needs to be told. Uncertainty is our ally. Uncertainty is everywhere in doctoring, from diagnosis and prognosis to communication. But uncertainty doesn't always feel good. Personally, I become itchy and twitchy and maybe a little sweaty. To alleviate those feelings, or to become more certain, there's an impulse to grab more data, which usually means more diagnostic testing. However, as I learned with Jill L., more data doesn't necessarily promise more certainty. Jill L. came one Saturday night to the ER with vague symptoms that included chest pain and shortness of breath. I went in search of problems that included a possible heart attack or blood clot in her lungs. I was a young physician, diligent, courteous, and devoid of any imagination. I was so focused on what she had and not missing a severe disease that I never asked why. Why did this impeccably dressed woman change obvious evening plans to come to this ER at this hour of night for what sounded like vague concerns? What was I missing? Eventually, she told me the real reason why she came to the ER. She was a victim of interpersonal violence, and she finally had enough and didn't know where else to turn. Studies have shown that physicians uncomfortable with uncertainty are prone to excessive diagnostic testing, are less likely to include uncertainty in conversation with their patients, and can be a source of psychological distress. The poet Mark Doty said, "It's not always easy to remember that in any process of inquiry, our uncertainty is our ally." Becoming comfortable with uncertainty requires changing our relationship with it. We shouldn't ignore it, pretend it's not there, or tailor our problem solving to questions with answers. If we don't welcome uncertainty, we might narrow the types of problems for consideration, limit what we're listening for, or value only those details that seem to support our preconceived beliefs. It isn't enough to tolerate uncertainty. We must learn to leverage and take advantage of uncertainty as markers for further investigation. The remedy for uncertainty is not knowing. I became comfortable with uncertainty when I embraced the importance of not knowing. I borrowed this notion of not knowing from the writer Donald Barthelme's essay of the same name. Barthelme describes the act of writing and the creative arts in general as a process of dealing with not knowing. Problems are crucial to not knowing, he said. Without problems and the possibility of moving the mind in unanticipated directions, there would be no invention. Developing comfort with uncertainty and not knowing is hard when physicians are incentivized for having the answers, not for owning up to what they don't know. Not knowing should not be confused with ignorance. It's not lack of knowledge or poor application of knowledge. Not knowing is a muscle that can become stronger and stabilized through training and interrogation of our thinking process, starting with the decisions we make even before we think we're making decisions. We can't forget that we seek out information. It doesn't choose us. For example, why do I select specific details in a patient's story, or any story, to focus on, like chest pain and difficulty breathing in Jill L.'s case, and not others? With Jill L., I felt stuck. Being stuck in medicine can imply failure, but through the lens of not knowing, we welcome being stuck. It might be the only clue that we're onto something, our inner alarm system telling us to slow down and think differently. How do we recognize when something is amiss, that we must change gears and examine a situation through different eyes? For me, it starts with a feeling, a pressure that resembles when a story I'm writing seems disorganized, and I find myself pushing it forward, forcing it, trying to make it work, when the story is insisting that all the twisting isn't helping. I've since learned to step back. The solution to what's next begins with a deep breath and the question, how did I get here and why? Where's the tension? What don't I know? the invitation to interrogate our thinking process is more likely to occur in institutional cultures that value those willing to take on problems. The best medicine won't work on the wrong story. As an emergency physician, I'm first and foremost a professional story listener, caring for precious storytellers under stressful conditions. But stories aren't solid, complete entities to be exchanged between patients and clinicians. A common frustration in emergency medicine is working with patient stories that feel obliquely or incompletely told. They feel like first drafts. Not infrequently, suboptimal outcomes or lapses in communication aren't the product of bad or inattentive physicians, but rather very smart and sometimes even brilliant minds well-versed in the medical literature who simply got the story wrong. I know how difficult it can be to create stories. It's not easy to put language to tender, complicated, and embarrassing experiences and then share them with strangers. Creating stories is hard under the best of circumstances. When I'm writing and revising in uninterrupted quiet, well-rested, and caffeinated. Now imagine you're a patient, anxious, tired, trying to be understood, and terrified of what your symptoms and what your story might mean. When writing sentences, you develop a different relationship to language. Not only to what's said and how it was phrased, you're aware of the gaps, what's left unsaid, the critical silences or evasions that might be the very thing you need to hear, but which is unsayable. The actor and writer Anna Deavere Smith wrote, "We can learn a lot about a person in the very moment that language fails them." But our brain craves narrative coherence. Experts ranging from Daniel Kahneman to Jonathan Gottschall write how we're hardwired to take cognitive shortcuts. Unconsciously, we'll weave random, incomplete data into a story. In medicine, as in life, it makes us susceptible to creating a recognizable story or shaping a more convenient story that is different from the one the patient is trying to tell. Modern medicine, with its fascination with technology, often ignores the power of stories. The latest diagnostic imaging is little help with a disorganized story. It won't tell us when we're off the mark. The best technology and the best medicine won't work on the wrong story. How we respond to constraints says a lot about us. Years ago, an esteemed professor of medicine offered this remark after I gave a talk at his medical school. "You're an ER doc," he said. "You don't have time for story." And he was right. There are so many constraints in what I do, time being one of them, and not only aren't they going away soon, they've only amplified and become more intense due to the unprecedented pandemic pressures. In addition to lack of time, other constraints include interruptions, being forced to make high-stakes decisions based on incomplete information, and hospital crowding. And there are less explicit constraints, like emotional exhaustion, limited compassion, and accommodating a healthcare system that seems to have forgotten that patients come first. "And these constraints won't stop patients from bringing their stories to the ER," I said to the esteemed professor. "In fact, if anything, these constraints make an argument for bringing as many tools as possible to patient care and their stories." Since that conversation many years ago, intense time pressures have since spread to providers in other medical fields as well. So these constraints are not just limited to the ER. We can't forget that stories reveal how people cope, succumb, and surmount the obstacles in their lives and make their way in the world we all share. Stories serve as portals of social interaction that pipe us emotionally into the experience of another. The pressures of the pandemic has demonstrated that preparedness requires everyone in healthcare and in society at large to be adaptable, flexible, and creative. This starts with a willingness to travel to the uncharted territories of others. That can't happen unless we recognize the constraints in our own thinking. Then we must lower our guard, draw up our courage, and invite people into our lives, even if it's only a few steps. And when others creak that door open for us, we must find the courage to take those steps ourselves. How we respond to constraints reveals something about us and who we are. If I've learned anything in my 3 decades as a professional listener and teller of stories in the ER and on the page, it is the importance and the necessity of humility. It's not always easy to understand another human, but it's possible and it's necessary. We're not going to be perfect, but making that effort matters.
Thank you, Jay. And thank you for listening, everyone. Tomorrow, I'm going to be back with some really big ideas from the book Sentience by psychologist Nicholas Humphrey. He thinks he's cracked the so-called hard problem of consciousness, and he'll lay it out for us here. If you're into this kind of thing, you really ought to check out my newsletter. It's a free weekly roundup of the biggest ideas in nonfiction, and you can sign up using the link in the episode notes or by finding The Next Big Idea on LinkedIn. I'm Michael Kovnat, and I'll see you tomorrow.